I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Melissa Cipriano, Executive Director of the Children's Heart Foundation. And it's that time of year again. The organization has its 22nd annual Walk with the Heart of a Child fundraising walk coming up. Melissa, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So for those who aren't familiar, what does the Children's Heart Foundation do?
We provide services to families who have children born with what's called a congenital heart defect. And about 50% of those kiddos have to have open heart surgeries, invasive surgeries, procedures. And so it puts the family not just through an emotional stressful time, but also a financial stressful time. And so the foundation was created nearly 25 years ago. Next year will be our 25th anniversary to help families get through their child's heart journey. We help with financial assistance, emotional support, and education to help them get through, you know, the hard times, the stressful times that they're experiencing.
Yeah, for sure. And how common is it for kids to be born with a congenital heart defect?
Very common. One out of every 100 babies born in America is born with some form of a congenital heart defect. And like I said prior, half those kiddos have had to have an open heart surgery, invasive procedures, things of that nature. And there is no cure. And many of these kids have to be on medications for the rest of their life. There's also some children that have to have transplants, pacemakers, things of that nature. So any parent having to deal with a medically fragile child is, you know, it takes a toll on their family. And we just want to be there to wrap our arms around them and help them any way we can during their journey.
Yeah. And what is that journey like after they've had surgery, they're on medication, but on a day-to-day basis, what could potentially happen to that kid that they need to be extra careful of?
Well, it depends. It depends on the type of CHD that they're diagnosed with. There's about 40 types of CHDs, and so it depends how complex their case is. So most kids that I come and encounter with, like the kids that go to our summer camp and things of that nature, you would have no idea that they've had a heart condition until you see their scars or you talk more with their mom or dad and, you know, they share their story with you. Typically, they can leave a normal life, but some of them, you know, kids with pacemakers, they can't play contact sports. That's one example of where they have to be extra cautious of their children's activities. That's why, like, our camp program is so important because we take extra precautions so these children can experience a summer camp tradition in a medical supervised setting to where their parents can rest assured that, okay, I can send my heart kiddo to camp because, you know, they know what to look out for and they know that they're not going to put my child in harm's way. So it's case by case. Each child is different and many children are more complex than others. And it just is, it's dependent on their care with their cardiologist and the precautions that they have to take.
Okay. So tell us about the Children's Heart Foundation's 22nd annual Walk with the Heart of a Child coming up at the end of March.
Absolutely. It is a fun family-filled event. It's one of our biggest fundraisers that we do. As a nonprofit, you know, everything that we bring in financially is from the donated dollar through grants, personal donations, and our special events. And this is our major event for the spring. And we have many families that are in attendance. We've got families that are fundraising for the organization so we can continue our great work that we do. And we've got business teams. We've got family teams, we've got individual walkers that all just come together to raise funds for the foundation.
And when and where exactly is it happening?
It is on March 29th. It is at Craig Ranch Regional Park. Registration is going to kick off at 9 a.m. and the walk will kick off about 10 a.m. after opening ceremonies. And we have carnival games and our vendor village. We've got entertainment with our DJ and we've just got a lot of things. We've got food trucks that are going to be out there. And it's a, like I said, a family-friendly event to kick off your spring and to help raise money all at the same time for the Children's Heart Foundation.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what are some of the specific vendors and community partners that will be there?
We've got McGruff, the crime dog, coming out with Metro. We've got all of our sponsors will have a booth. We've invited some partner agencies like Make-A-Wish and some other nonprofits, Ronald McDonald House Charities, and they'll all be out there cheering our heart families on and helping us raise awareness for CHDs.
And besides the fun activities that are happening on site, what will the participants experience during the actual walk?
It's about a 1 mile walk around Craig Ranch, and we kick off the event with, you know, our opening ceremonies, our national anthem will be sung, and then we'll do a countdown. And then the families will, prior to the walk, they can also make a team sign for their family. We've got all of the supplies in our vendor area where families can make their team signs. And then we have several volunteers that will be cheering them on with, you know, the cowbells and just cheering all of our families on as they walk the path, which is about a mile long loop back to the park. And then we also give out awards to our families and our companies and our individuals that raise funds for the organization. So we've got some awards that we'll be handing out as well.
Nice. So participants can make teams and signs for their teams and get their families involved, but how exactly do they raise funds through the Walk with the Heart of a Child?
So we've got this really great platform. Once a family registers, our families are free to register, but for those individuals or teams that don't particularly have a heart child, they can register and pay a fee of $25 for adults, $15 for students and seniors and our military. And those funds are part of the fundraising efforts. But in addition to that, once you register online, you are able to create your own fundraising page, and you can send that fundraising link out to your own friends and family to help you raise funds for our cause.
Okay. Now, you mentioned a lot of services that Children's Heart Foundation provides for heart families, but what specifically do the funds raised during the walk go to support?
It supports all of our programming. So everything from our financial assistance while a family's in a medical crisis and we're able to assist them, you know, with whether it's utilities, help with rent, or help with a prescription. We also provide a summer camp experience for heart patients ages 7 to 17 years of age. And so our funds that we raise also goes to our camp program, which is called Camp Mend a Heart. And then we also have family activities throughout the year, as well as our teen group, our scholarship program, and our holiday assistance program, and our travel assistance program. So all of that combined, you know, helps our families in need, and we can't do it without our community support.
Yeah, definitely. Now, when you talk about travel assistance, is that because families need to travel sometimes to get these surgeries and other medical procedures that the children need?
Absolutely. We cover the entire state of Nevada. So in Nevada, there is one pediatric cardiology clinic, which is called the Children's Heart Center. They are amazing. They have an office in Reno and they have two offices here in Southern Nevada. And there's only one hospital in our state that has a pediatric cardiology unit. So any child that is hospitalized for their heart condition and needs either procedures or surgeries, that happens at Sunrise Children's Hospital. And so those families from all over our state that require any type of hospitalization for surgeries or procedures have to come to Las Vegas. So we help those families get here with gas cards. We partner with Ronald McDonald House to get them into the Ronald McDonald House for their lodging. But if that is full and there isn't availability, then we also help with lodging in a local hotel that's close to Sunrise Hospital. And we help those families with that cost. And if we have families that have to go out of our state to other hospitals like in California or Utah or Arizona, we will help with the travel costs for those families as well.
Wow, that's all fantastic. Okay, so where can people go if they want to find out more about the Children's Heart Foundation or, even more importantly, sign up to form a team and take part in the Walk with the Heart of a Child?
Absolutely. All the links are on our webpage. It's chfn.org. That's CHF as in Frank, N as in Nancy, .org.
All right, perfect. So once again, the website for Children's Heart Foundation is chfn.org. You can remember Children's Heart Foundation, Nevada. chfn.org. You can find out more about what the Children's Heart Foundation does in our community, helping those children with congenital heart defects. And you can also find out more about the Walk with the Heart of a Child that's coming up on Saturday, March 29th at Craig Ranch Regional Park, 9 a.m. registration, 10 a.m. opening ceremonies and walk. Of course, the vendors, the community partner booth, the food trucks, all of that's happening that day, as well as the 1 mile walk around Craig Ranch Regional Park. And this is the 22nd annual, so great time to get out and get involved in Walk with the Heart of a Child. Again, the website chfn.org for the Children's Heart Foundation. And we've been speaking today with Melissa Cipriano. She's Executive Director of the Children's Heart Foundation. And Melissa, I really appreciate you being here, letting us know more about what the Children's Heart Foundation does and why it's so important in our community, and letting us know more about the 22nd annual Walk with the Heart of a Child fundraising walk that will help you do all those things that you do for the community. So thank you so much for your time today.
Gosh, thank you so much for giving us the time so we can get the word out and make it a great day on Walk Day on the 29th.
You know what hope is? Hope is action. Carving a path forward, even when it's hard.
And kids who still know how to dream. They're the best pathfinders of all.
So at Child Fund, hope means helping millions of children living in poverty worldwide to grow up healthy, educated, skilled, and so all those good things can come true for them. Safe.
And that means safe at home, safe at school, and safe online.
Hope means walking this path together, all of us. Because when we work together, we can do so much more.
That's right. Hope includes you.
Child Fund, because we need each other.
To learn how Child Fund works with children in 23 countries to help them achieve their full potential, visit childfund.org. That's childfund.org.
This is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. I'm Heather Vale, and I'm speaking with Abigail Ross Hopper, President and CEO of the Solar Energy Industries Association. New analysis from the association shows that federal clean energy tax credits have sparked a significant increase in U.S. solar module manufacturing, and Nevada is helping to lead the solar boom. Abigail, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Heather.
So for those who aren't familiar, what is the Solar Energy Industries Association?
So we are the National Trade Association for the Solar and Storage Industry. So we represent all the businesses involved in this ecosystem. So manufacturers of solar projects, developers of solar projects, installers of solar projects and storage projects, banks that finance them all. So kind of everyone that touches solar, every company that touches solar, those are our members.
Okay. And what is the current state of solar energy in the U.S.?
You know, that it is an exciting time to be in solar. We are announcing in the coming days that 2024 was our largest year ever in terms of solar deployment. The really amazing thing. So that's amazing, right? Like, it's great to have a record-breaking year for your own technology, but there was more solar installed in the United States than any other energy source. 90% of all new electricity in the United States was solar. So that's kind of bananas. And then the third thing that happened last year is that we installed, there is more solar added to the grid from this technology than any other technology in the last two decades. So more solar than natural gas, more solar than nukes, more solar than any other source. And that's the 90%. But then in terms of the overall number, right, it's 50 gigawatts, which doesn't mean anything if you're not an energy nerd. But sort of that total capacity that was installed is more than natural gas has installed in the United States in any one year in the last 20 years, right? So it is hard to overstate how transformational this is.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, how does Nevada compare to the rest of the country?
Well, Nevada has long been a leader in the solar industry. And at the moment, sort of with all of the solar that's installed, Nevada is number 6 in the nation in terms of amount of solar cumulative solar that's been installed in the state. There's enough to power 1.5 million homes there. So you have quite a footprint.
Yeah, that's great. Now, just out of curiosity, which states rank higher than Nevada?
The states that rank higher than Nevada, California, Texas, Florida, Arizona, probably not ones that would surprise you.
Yeah.
So we do it like by cumulative, right? Over all time, how much? And then by annual. And one of the things that's happened is California has long been the number one solar state sort of year over year in terms of new installations. And last year in 2023 and 2024, Texas took over that spot, which is really interesting. In 2024, Ohio was in the top states for solar deployment. Maybe not something that sort of the average person would guess, but it is no longer simply because of policy. People and companies and utilities mostly choose to go solar because it's the lowest cost.
Yeah, okay. Now, for those who haven't made the switch to solar, what do they need to know?
What they need to know if they're a homeowner thinking about going solar is that it is a really important investment in your home. Just like if you were purchasing a new roof or HVAC system, you should do some comparative shopping. You should talk to your friends and neighbors who've gone solar. There is great information on our website, seia.org, about the questions to ask, the kind of contracts there are. You can purchase it outright. You can lease your roof. You can enter into an agreement. There's information about the tax credits. So, you know, it's an important home improvement like you would, and so you should do your due diligence like you would for any other home improvement. But for the vast majority of homeowners, you save money on your electricity bills, right? So it's a really good step to take if you are both A, trying to save money, and B, trying to kind of get all of the vagrancies out of your budget, right? Like, I don't know mm-hmm. about you, but when I open my electric bill every month, I have a lot of trees around my house, so I don't have solar in my house. So when I open my electric bill every month, there's always that like deep breath, like, oh no, what's it going to be, right? Is it going to be wildly expensive? And once you go solar, right, you have a steady, usually a very steady electricity bill because the sunshine is free.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Especially around here. We've got plenty of sunshine in Las Vegas.
Beautiful sunshine in Las Vegas. It's one of my favorite places to enjoy the sun.
Awesome. So once again, that website is SEIA.org. That stands for Solar Energy Industries Association, SEIA.org. You can find plenty of information about the current state of solar in the U.S. and how Nevada compares to the rest of the country. So SEIA.org. And we've been speaking today with Abigail Ross Hopper. She's president and CEO of the Solar Energy Industries Association. And Abigail, I really appreciate you being here, updating us on the latest in solar energy, how it affects people, and what difference it's making in the U.S. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Heather. It was great to talk to you.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with a sun protection factor, or SPF, of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. UVA rays age the skin, UVB rays burn, and both cause cancer. But the perfect sunscreen doesn't count if you use it wrong. Don't need sunscreen on a cloudy day? Wrong. 80% of UV rays still get through the haze. Only use sunscreen at the beach? Nope. Anytime you're outside, UV rays attack the skin, so you need protection. And you have to reapply sunscreen every 2 hours. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Dr. Laquada Sumpter, teacher, children's author, and STEM philanthropist who leads drone and engineering camps throughout the country, and Scarlett Howery, Vice President of Public Workforce Solutions at DeVry University. March is Women's History Month, and a recent DeVry University report looked at the current state of women in tech and why there's a gender gap in skills training and proficiency. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Happy to be here.
So, Scarlett, what did DeVry's report find about the gender gap in technology?
Yeah. So what is so interesting is we continue to see that learners are very much interested in gaining upskilling and reskilling. However, there are still a lot of barriers for women, especially thinking about their careers and their opportunities. Really just having the time to fit upskilling into their careers has really been a significant challenge for them. And having employers in industry to find different ways and different pathways so that you can fit upskilling into your life has really been a challenge for many women.
And when we talk about the gender gap, what is the difference between men and women in STEM specifically?
Currently, we're looking at a significant difference, and the data shows that there are still some challenges with women in STEM and that there's still work to be done for women to take on the STEM roles. A lot of young girls do not join into the STEM field because of the lack of role models in the field. So our program, Her World with DeVrine, actually works to close that gender gap and introduce young girls to STEM at a young age, as well as provide them with role models that they can see themselves working in the STEM industry.
Okay. Dr. Sumpter, how does that work with the role models? What types of role models are you giving to the girls in the program?
For example, girls get to see, such as myself, a drone pilot and an electrical and computer engineer. They get to see someone who has worked in the field for a number of years. They also get to see electricians and robotics or technologists, those individuals who are currently working in the field, and they show and tell them what they're doing in the field. And for the Her World program, there is going to be a meteorologist as the head speaker for the current program that we're having.
That's awesome. Scarlett, why did you decide that the Her World program would be good to have in alignment with DeVry when it aims towards younger girls?
Yeah, you know, like Dr. Sumpter, I am passionate about this initiative. There are so many great opportunities for us to help learners gain access to STEM so that they can do hands-on activities while they're still curious. Young girls are able to do these hands-on activities, get access to other professionals that are in the STEM career that look like them, so they can begin to build their confidence and really realize that they can truly do STEM. That's so important. It's why we're so excited to partner with the Boys and Girls Club here in North Central Illinois, where we'll bring the Her World event and learners will have access to exercises and drones, as Dr. Sumpter has mentioned, building those drones and watching them fly, scientific experience is that they will then get to determine how they can fit STEM into their world and into their career. It's an exciting opportunity, I think, for these girls.
Yeah, definitely. Now, of course, there are Boys and Girls Clubs across the country, including we have 13 right here in the Las Vegas Valley. Is there any plan to expand the Her World program to other Boys and Girls Clubs and other kids?
I'd love for Dr. Sumpter to talk a little bit about some of his additional initiatives.
Additionally, I have worked with a number of Boys and Girls Club from the Atlanta area as well as Albany, Georgia. I think it would be a great idea to expand to other areas and introduce other girls and boys to STEM at an early age.
Awesome. Scarlett, what do you see as the future of technology?
Wow, there's a lot. So AI and high volume data analytics are just a few that are changing the way that we work and the way that we learn. You're seeing many different roles that are disappearing. And in other cases, those roles are changing significantly, probably in ways we hadn't even thought about 3 to 5 years ago. That's why it's really important that when we talk to employers, we tell them that upskilling and reskilling is not just a nice to have, it's essential to have that. The degree is never going to go away, but it's just not the only pathway anymore to gaining access to these careers. We need to make sure that educational institutions provide pathways for learners so that they can, again, get the skills that they need for these new roles. It's why at DeVry, for example, we infuse AI into our programs and allow learners to not only understand the concepts behind AI, which are important, but we also look at it in context to their current degree programs, as well as to the industry they're going into. So the goal here is for learners to walk away feeling like they can use AI immediately in their careers.
Okay. Now, do you both see the same types of careers in the future where we can tailor the girls today towards those, or are we going to be looking at totally different career opportunities in the future?
I think there are similar career opportunities, but one thing we want to teach the girls at a young age is critical thinking, problem solving skills, which allows them to maneuver between different careers in the STEM field. They gain that knowledge of like thinking critically, analyzing, and it allows them to be innovative and creative as well. And also teaching them communication and teamwork skills that they can use in different careers.
Okay. And Scarlett, what's the DeVry Women in Tech Scholars Program?
Oh, I just love this program. It is an opportunity for women that are stepping into careers in technology to gain access to additional support. That could be mentors, it could be additional certifications, it could be programming that exposes them to other leaders who are developing as leaders within the world of technology. It's so critical when women see themselves in their careers that they continue to want to not only start in that career, but continue to advance in that career. We're really proud at DeVry to offer the Women in Tech Scholars Program. It truly has been one that has helped many students and many of our learners move to the next level within technology.
Fantastic. So you're both doing amazing work in the field. Where can listeners go to find out more about STEM programming for girls?
Yeah, to find out more, visit us at devry.edu.
All right. Awesome. So devry.edu is the website for DeVry University. That's devry.edu, devry.edu. And you can check out more of the programming, including the Women in Tech Scholars Program and Her World, which is being launched for younger girls. And we've been speaking today with Dr. LaQuada Sumpter. She's a teacher, children's author, STEM philanthropist, and also Scarlett Howery, Vice President of Public Workforce Solutions at DeVry University. And I really appreciate you both being here and talking to us about girls in STEM, especially for Women's History Month. But obviously, the gender gap and the opportunities are something that we need to work on all the time. So thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
I'm Heather Vale, and you're listening to the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me today is Dr. Christine Momenti, Scientific Advisor to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, and Dee Dee West, a five-year survivor of colorectal cancer. March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States, but it's preventable and treatable when detected early. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Momenti, first of all, what is the Colorectal Cancer Alliance?
The Colorectal Cancer Alliance is an incredible organization that has been working to prevent colorectal cancer among the public and to provide cancer resources for survivors that have been diagnosed with the disease. They have an excellent website, colorectalcancer.org, that provides a lot of resources for patients, for their family members, for their caretakers once the disease has been diagnosed. And they have another website, getscreen.org, which is for people to go on the website. You can do a risk assessment, determine your risk for colorectal cancer, and your screening options, which are critical.
Okay. What are the symptoms of colorectal cancer?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of times in its earliest stages, there are no symptoms at all. And that's why we are so passionate about getting people screened for colorectal cancer, because you may not feel anything at all. But if you do have a symptom or symptoms, it may be related to rectal bleeding. You may notice that you have abdominal cramping. You may be more fatigued. You may have some anemia. The unfortunate thing is that a lot of these symptoms get misinterpreted or misdiagnosed, because it may be a diagnosis of hemorrhoids or in women menstrual cycle findings that a provider may think is causing those symptoms. But you can't ignore those symptoms. You need to be screened whether you have symptoms or not at the age of 45.
Why is it 45 now instead of 50?
Yes, so 45 is the new 50. The screening age was lowered because we're seeing an alarming increase in cases under 50. So now it's not so uncommon to see men and women being diagnosed in their 20s and their 30s and their 40s. And so a few years ago, the screening age was lowered to 45, but we're finding that a lot of the population doesn't know it's 45. And so people are in their mid-40s and 46, 47, 48 think they're too young. They're not too young. You need to be screened if you're average risk at 45. If you have a family history of polyps or cancer, screening age is at 40 or 10 years before your relative's diagnosis of colorectal cancer or polyps, which can take people down into their 30s for screening oftentimes.
Yeah, definitely. Dee Dee, what has your experience with colorectal cancer been like?
So in 2020, at the age of 51, I became very sick. I was incredibly tired. I was dizzy. I was really weak. And I promised a family member that I would go get a physical. And so when I met with my doctor, he encouraged me to get a colonoscopy just based on my age. So a few months later, I was extremely shocked to learn that I had cancerous polyps and that I had cancer. So as a result, I have become a big advocate to spread awareness and partnered with the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, which is the leading nonprofit to help prevent this disease. And they have incredible resources, including their colorectalcancer.org website, which is a really good resource for people like me who are diagnosed with the disease.
How has your diagnosis influenced your passion for advocating for early screening and prevention?
I have motivated countless people to get colonoscopies. I am a broken record in advocating for screening. I will drive friends and family to their colonoscopies. So it has 91% survival rate, you know, if caught early. And screening absolutely saves lives. My colonoscopy saved my life. It was an amazing nap. And I promise people that the screening is a lot easier than the mental gymnastics of a cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Dr. Momenti, many people would associate a colonoscopy with a serious, really inconvenient procedure that you only go through if you absolutely have to. Is that the only way to screen for colorectal cancer?
You know, it's not. And let me just say, a colonoscopy can vary from person to person. It is the only test that will prevent colorectal cancer by the removal of precancerous polyps. So colonoscopy is considered the gold standard for colorectal cancer screening. But as you mentioned, yes, there are other methods. There are a lot of different stool-based, home-based methods that you can do in the privacy of your home. Those methods will detect cancer early, and they're very effective at detecting cancer early. And in many cases, they can detect polyps early. Not as effective as cancer, but it can detect polyps. But if you really want to prevent cancer, colonoscopy is the way to go. But we always say the number one test is the one that gets done. So whatever people are comfortable with, our mission is to get the population in the United States screened for colorectal cancer for this deadly yet very preventable disease. It's one of the few cancers that are preventable. We want people to take action. Go to getscreened.org.
And besides being preventable, how is it treated when it is caught?
You know, when it's in its earliest stages, there's a lot of different treatment options available. And as Dee Dee said, the 91%, well, there's a five-year 91% survival rate when it's caught early. And we know that the stage of the cancer is highly correlated with survival. So the earlier stage, the better the treatment, the higher survival for everyone. This is a good news story. Screening should be a positive story that helps people prevent the disease and show that they had nothing there, which would be the best case scenario Or they had a polyp removed and prevented cancer, which is another great scenario. And that's what we see the majority of time. So don't be afraid. Go out and get screened. Take action if you're 45 plus.
Okay, awesome. So one more time, where can listeners go for more information, both about the Colorectal Cancer Alliance and if they would like to get screened as well?
So getscreened.org is the website to do your risk assessment, look at your screening options. Colorectalcancer.org is an incredible resource for patients, for family members. There are a number of things on there that will help a patient get through their survivorship journey and also assist their family members. And it's a great community as well, where they can connect with a lot of other cancer survivors and create a network around them for support.
All right, perfect. So once again, colorectalcancer.org is the main website for the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, colorectalcancer.org. You can find out plenty of information there about the alliance and about colorectal cancer. And of course, getscreened.org is the website to go to if you'd like to find out more about getting screened. They're urging everyone to get screened age 45 and above or earlier if you are in a certain high-risk category. So getscreened.org will give you all of that information. March is National Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, but this is an important topic all year round. We've been speaking today with Dr. Christine Momenti, scientific advisor to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance, and Dee Dee West, a five-year survivor of colorectal cancer. And I really appreciate you both being here with us. Dee Dee sharing your personal story and Dr. Momenti giving us more information about this cancer that is deadly and yet preventable and treatable. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Stomach cancer is often misdiagnosed as acid reflux, indigestion, or an ulcer. Because of this, most stomach cancers are found in late stages when there are little to no options left for treatment. I'm not a healthcare provider, just a young mother who lost her husband to this cruel disease. If you or a loved one is experiencing persistent symptoms that can be really common, such as heartburn, having trouble swallowing, or indigestion, you should seek help with a gastroenterologist as soon as possible. You can also contact nostomachforcancer.org for more information.
In honor of all those we've lost to cancer and those still fighting and thriving, like basketball analyst and cancer champion Dick Vitale.
I want to beat cancer. I'm going to beat it. That's no doubt in my mind. I'm going to win this battle.
Defeating cancer will take all of us. Join our team to help fund game-changing research that saves lives. At the V Foundation, V is for victory over cancer. V is for victory over the odds. V is for victory over health disparities. Victory over setbacks. Victory over the unknown. V is for victory over giving up.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Join the V Foundation team and help save lives.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind. It cannot touch my heart. And it cannot touch my soul.
Join our team in the fight against cancer at V.org.
I'm Heather Vale, and this is the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show. Joining me is Jane Jones, author of The No Sugar Baker, Cookbook for Healthy Living and No Regrets. March is National Nutrition Month, and Jane's health journey is filled with lessons and insight about how what we eat affects how we live. Jane, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
So what inspired you to write your new book, The No Sugar Baker, Cookbook for Healthy Living and No Regrets?
Well, I would say it's been 4 years of an unbelievable health journey. So I'm a lawyer by trade. My husband dragged me to the emergency room. Can you believe it? 4 years ago on my birthday. I'm embarrassed to tell you my blood pressure was 289 over 189. My glucose level, I didn't even know what glucose level meant, was over 600. You should be around 100. So the ER physician did run a bunch of different tests and diagnosed me as severely diabetic and sent me on my merry way. What she didn't tell me, I was going to wake up to no eyesight for the next 3 weeks of my life. But here's the good part. 6 months later, I was insulin free, diabetic medicine free, sugar free, 60 pounds lighter, and my vision was back to 20/20.
Wow. And how did you accomplish that?
I went literally cold turkey on the sugar. I literally had to cut sugar out of my life. She literally said, for the rest of your life, you need to eat lean meats and salads. I took that. I literally did exactly. I'm a rule follower. So I did exactly what she did. So I eliminated all sugar. I started working out, walking, basically doing aerobic exercise, 30 minutes, probably four times a week, and just really focused on my health for the first time ever. But I speak in terms of before I got sick and after I got sick. So before I got sick, I used to love to bake all the time, and that was my hobby. But after I got sick, I literally Googled type 2 diabetes, and the first thing you read about is obesity. I threw everything in my kitchen away. I was so mad at the world. And then I kind of changed my wits, so to speak, and became known as a no-sugar baker.
All of that just because you eliminated sugar?
I think it's a combination of focusing on your health. Like I said, like there's no magic formula, right? There's every body has a different formula to what makes your body work, right? Unfortunately, when we were in the ER, the physician asked if there's diabetes in my family history. I had no idea. So my husband called my parents at the time, and it turns out both sides of my grandparents were diabetic. She said I had a double whammy. So there is a factor of genetics that plays into this, of course. And I think there's a factor of environment that plays into it. I came from a very upper middle income, very Midwestern, very Scandinavian family where we were very active as kids. But, you know, sometimes the cheapest food is the route to go because, of course, the family's trying to make it. So processed foods, right now I know March is Nutrition Month, as you said. And I'm a big believer that nutrition is the best form of medicine that's out there because I'm a living example of it. What we didn't get into yet is that it'll be 2 years, June 13th, when I got sick again, thought I had the flu. This time it turned out to be a kidney stone. And kidney stones are very common for diabetics. You can get kidney stones for many different ways, but for a diabetic, it happens to be a common occurrence. So went in for a kidney stone, we thought it was, and a large, super large kidney stone. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that there was sepsis underneath that kidney stone. My body went into sepsis shock. I went into two cardiac arrests. CPR saved my life twice. I had a 1% chance of survival twice and spent time on a ventilator, came through. And at the exact same time, this is the craziest thing. So all the doctors were like, you know, she's ready to go home from the hospital, the ICU, from the hospital, all that jazz. But we have one problem. And my husband's like, what's the problem? And they're like, she doesn't eat. Well, she doesn't eat because every time you go to the hospital room, right, the biggest occasion during your hospital stay is the little card you get about what you want to circle for your food for the day. That's like the highlight of the day, right? For everybody it is. Well, when you look at that little card, he's like, everything on there has sugar in it. On one hand, you're telling her you can't have sugar. On the other hand, you're giving her a card that's full of sugar. He's like, what is she supposed to do? You know what they had to do? They let it, my mom was there at the time, of course. She's like, she loves a little like raspberries, blueberries, strawberries are very low in sugar. Only fruits that are really low in glycemic. But she's like, make her a little parfait. So they made three parfaits with heavy whipping cream because whipping cream is sugar-free. People don't realize that. They made three parfaits, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and I was released the next day. They had to run to the grocery store, the local grocery store. This is a huge health system. Had to run to the local grocery store in order to find food that I could, berries that I could have. How absolutely ridiculous is that to hear?
That's crazy.
Right? It makes, like, I tell this story right now, like, I have this great blog that's very authentic out there that's comes with the two cookbooks that really does go into a deep dive into what it is. But I've been telling people, like, can you believe, like, literally, they didn't have a sugar-free option, right?
That's ridiculous.
It makes no sense. So, you know, right now during Nutrition Month also, I just wrote a personal letter, believe it or not, to the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr. And I said, hey, look, I got this unbelievable story. So for the last 4 years of my life, I've been completely sugar-free. Tell them like what it is. I'm not the skinny little fitness model out there telling you never to eat sugar again. I'm the real deal because it affects my vision. Now it affects my heart. It has affected what I put in my mouth. Literally affects everything, right? It's the whole well-being. But when I was in the hospital in the ICU on a ventilator, I was at a 1% chance of survival twice. I made it. And the factor for me to go home was that there was not one thing I could eat in their cafeteria. Yeah. Stupid.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned that before you got sick, baking was one of your favorite hobbies. And obviously, I mean, your new cookbook is about baking. But the no sugar baker. So what do you use as a sweetener instead of sugar?
Yeah. So here's what happens. So basically, like I said, I threw everything in my kitchen away. I was mad at the world. I was never going to bake ever again. Everybody kept telling me that, like, you just need, that was, I got, my birthday's in August. So it was August to December. Everybody's like, you just need to get through the holidays. Once you get through the holidays, you'll be like, you know, coastal free. Everybody's in January, like the whole new you type attitudes. I got through the holidays and I found myself at our local grocery store. And I literally, I'm a faith believer. I said a prayer and I'm like, dear God, there's got to be an answer. There's got to be a way. And I turn around and I found erythritol, which is, it's a product that you can find at all the big box stores. It's all over the place. It's all natural. It is a sweetener that is the skin of a grape is what it is. So I bought it and I was like, okay, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, it's expensive, but it's cheaper than a ER room. ER visit, right? It's cheaper than that. So I bought it. I live with my husband. I didn't tell him. My parents live across the street. I didn't tell them either. I made a batch of chocolate chip cookies using it. I didn't touch the dough. I brought it over to my parents as like the guinea pigs. You know what happened?
They loved it.
No, they looked at the cookies and they started to cry. And my reaction was like, oh dear God, are they that terrible? And here's what they said back. They're like, you know what? Finally, that spirit and smile in our daughter is back.
Aww.
They're like, we've been waiting for this day since the day you got sick. And then they tried it and they told me they liked them. So then I started like experimenting. And ever since that, I call now my kitchen like my science lab, right? Because I'm like, some things work and some things don't work. And so I never had this idea of putting a cookbook out there ever, ever, ever. I started as a blogger. Our daughter came home with the idea during COVID from college. She was like, hey, people really like what you're doing. You're sort of like the known as the no sugar baker. You should start that on social media just to make her happy. That's why I did it. Huh. So I literally just started out just as a little blogger. You know, I got the best domain name ever, nosugarbaker.com. And I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this the right way. So I'm going to really tell like what it's like, right? Like I never knew that restaurants, I always thought that omelets were like a safe choice for a diabetic or for anybody that's trying to do sugar-free, because I never knew that some restaurants put pancake batter into the eggs to make an omelet.
Yes. Yes.
I never knew that, right? It's not even funny. It's kind of actually sad.
I know, especially for like celiacs.
Right. The second I get that, right? My body reacts to sugar in two different ways right now. So if I was to get sugar without knowing it, both three ways, I either vomit, I either have really bad diarrhea, or my vision goes. And let me tell you, I never want to lose that vision ever again, because that was the scariest point in my life, right? But I had, the first time I had that omelet that way, I was at an airport.
Wow.
I'll never forget the diarrhea I had in the airport. I write about it in my blog because it was unbelievable. But that's what happens. And then my husband and I sit there and we're stumped. Like, what did you just eat? Like, what was the problem? And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, you do what to your eggs? Like, why don't you tell people that? Because it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. When I found that out, I thought the same thing. Exactly.
Or like, I always like, so we have to ask. So I call my sugar an allergy, because once I say that at a restaurant, because restaurants are tricky, right? Once you say that, I'm like, well, I'm allergic to sugar. Then they really have a watchful eye, because they know that they have to be careful. But if you just say you don't have sugar, they kind of like seem to skip over things that have sugar. Like milk is full of sugar. So I need to know, if you're making a soup, are you using cream or are you using milk? And they're like, well, it doesn't matter. I'm like, well, yes, it does.
Yes, it does matter.
Yes.
Now, besides blogging and publishing your cookbook to help others, how have you empowered special needs communities and worked with nonprofits?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. So even before all this, so like 10 to 11 years ago, my mom managed group homes in Northern Minnesota for years. And she came to my husband and I with this great idea. She's like, you know, I have this idea for you too. We're like, okay, that's all we need is our idea. What's your idea? And she was like, our clients work jobs, they make an income, but they have no one to take them on vacation. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, what 25-year-old do you know that wants to go on vacation with mom and dad? I'm like, good point. And she's like, why don't you two start a nonprofit that offers chaperone travel for folks with IDD, intellectual disabilities? It take them, like let them go on a trip and they pay for their way, like they would do a vacation, but you're showing them the US. So we did that. And when we're on these trips, I noticed that a lot of them like to talk about food. Eating meals was the highlight of the day, three times a day. And meals were consisting of huge calories, and most have struggles with obesity and wellness. So we have teamed up with special needs communities across the US, where now we do classes about at least once a month, where we're teaching sugar-free baking to folks that have IDD, so they can go home and share those recipes, share my excitement about sugar-free baking with their families or their friends. and just incorporating who we are. We do it all the time. I absolutely love it. But it all started from that nonprofit that we started 10 years ago. And I thought, you know what? There's a need here. There's a community that's missing out. And, you know, it's great. We have a blast. We do it all the time. And we do a lot with the special needs community.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that. All right. Now, you did mention your website, but let's give it again and where people can find out more, you know, access your amazing recipes that you have published online and also get your new book, The No Sugar Baker Cookbook for Healthy Living and No Regrets.
So basically, you just got to go to www.nosugarbaker.com. There's over 250 free sugar-free recipes posted there. I post them constantly. Follow me on Instagram. Follow me on Facebook. I'm not on Twitter or I don't know what you call them anymore. I'm just on those two platforms. There's a YouTube channel out there that's not even me. So just go to www.nosugarbaker.com. They have all the free recipes there. People message me all the time, personal stories about asking questions. I answer back. And then you can also, if you want the hard copy of the book, it's at all the big retailers.
Okay, awesome. So once again, that website is nosugarbaker.com, nosugarbaker.com. You can access plenty of free sugar-free recipes that Jane has posted there. You can also follow her on Facebook and Instagram. And if you'd like to get the new book, The No Sugar Baker Cookbook for Healthy Living and No Regrets, you can pick that up at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you like to get your books. Once again, the website, nosugarbaker.com. And we've been speaking today with Jane Jones. She's author of The No Sugar Baker Cookbook for Healthy Living and No Regrets. And Jane, wow, what a story. It's so inspiring. It's so motivating. I'm so glad you shared it with us today. And I really appreciate your time. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. So have a great day, everybody.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Heather Vail with the Odyssey Las Vegas Public Affairs Show, and this is your community events calendar for nonprofit initiatives and charity events around the Valley. The Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, or NPHY, is holding their annual plastic food drive through March 31st. You can purchase gift cards through their Amazon wish list, make a donation online, or drop off fast food and grocery gift cards at the NPHY Drop-In Center, 4981 Shirley Street near UNLV, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Donate or find out more at nphy.org. That stands for Nevada Partnership for Homeless Youth, nphy.org. Monday's Dark with Mark Chinook is a bi-monthly musical fundraising party at The Space, with each event raising $10,000 for a specific charity in 90 minutes. Upcoming shows include Monday, March 24th at 8 p.m. benefiting Care Chest, and Monday, April 7th at 8 p.m. benefiting the ProStart program. Get tickets or find out more details at mondaysdark.com. That's mondaysdark.com. The 22nd annual Walk with the Heart of a Child to support the Children's Heart Foundation is happening on Saturday, March 29th at Craig Ranch Regional Park with 9 a.m. registration and 10 a.m. opening ceremonies and walk. There's also vendors, community partner booths, Kid Zone, and food trucks on site as well. Find out more or register to walk at chfn.org. That stands for Children's Heart Foundation, Nevada, chfn.org. the 7th annual Walk for Friendship Las Vegas Fundraiser Walk and Community Carnival is happening on Sunday, March 30th, with check-in at 10 a.m., welcome ceremony at 11 a.m., walk at 11:30, and carnival from noon to 2 p.m. at Las Vegas Sports Park, 1400 North Rampart Boulevard. Support the Friendship Circle's efforts to provide social and recreational opportunities for children and young adults with disabilities. Find out more or register at walkforfriendshiplv.com. That's the number 4, walkforfriendshiplv.com. The Collaboration Center Foundation's 5th annual Night on Blanc Gala is happening on Friday, April 25th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Collaboration Center's campus, 8390 West Windmill between Durango and Buffalo. This year's honoree is Mayor Shelley Berkeley, and proceeds support the Collaboration Center's programming for families touched by disabilities. Get tickets or more information at collablv.org. That's collablv.org. Make-A-Wish Southern Nevada is holding their 23rd annual Walk for Wishes fundraising event on World Wish Day, Saturday, April 26, with 7 a.m. registration and the walk and run starting at 8 a.m. at Town Square, Las Vegas. Make-A-Wish chapters and affiliates across the globe come together each year to celebrate World Wish Day, the anniversary of the wish that inspired the founding of Make-A-Wish back in 1980. Sign up or find out more information at wish.org/snv/walk. That's wish.org/snv/walk. And Aid for AIDS of Nevada, or AFAN, is hosting the 35th annual AIDS Walk Las Vegas on Sunday, April 27th, with registration at 8:30 a.m., resource fair at 9 a.m., and walk at 10 at Las Vegas Ballpark, 1650 South Pavilion Center Drive. Penn and Teller will return as grand marshals for the 24th consecutive year. Register for the event or find out more at afanlv.org. That stands for Aid for AIDS Nevada, Las Vegas. So AFANLV.org, AFANLV.org.